Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your festive algorithm of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
Sobre a cabeça os aviões, sob os meus pés os caminhões, aponta contra os chapadões meu nariz. Eu organizo o movimento, eu oriento o carnaval, eu inauguro o monumento no Planalto Central do país. Viva a bossa, sa, sa, viva a palhoça, sa, 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 sa. Viva a bossa, sa, sa, viva a palhoça, sa, 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 sa.
That's Tropicália by Caetano Veloso. The revered Brazilian singer-songwriters Caetano Veloso and Gilberto Gil have just passed through New York playing a couple of shows at Brooklyn Academy of Music. And we are extremely lucky to have Caetano Veloso with us in the studio today. Someone who is one of the great, I want to say Brazilian musicians, but that's not quite it. I want to say singer-songwriters of the last century, but that's not quite it. Somehow it's a little bigger than that. In any case, we're very happy to have you here on the podcast, Caetano.
Hi.
You're on tour with Gilberto Gil,
yes.
Something that you've done perhaps many times in the past within Brazil, not so many times outside of Brazil.
Not really so many times, even in Brazil, just the two of us, the way we're doing now. We did it 22 years ago.
Yeah.
And now. Otherwise, I'd play by myself, he'd play by himself,
yeah,
with bands or alone. And we played together with Maria Bethânia and,
yeah,
Gal Costa in a fake group we created during the in the mid-70s.
The Doces...
Doces Bárbaros.
Bárbaros, yeah.
Yes.
You met Gil, who's not here, by the way. He couldn't be here.
He couldn't be here. He had another appointment.
But you met Gil in 1963?
Yes.
This tour is about 50 years of working together. When you think of 50 years of working together with him, what do you trace it back to? What is the particular moment or project or concert or?
As a matter of fact, this thing of 50 years,
yeah,
is mostly because I arrived in Rio and São Paulo, the biggest cities in Brazil, because of my sister Maria Bethânia in 1964. And in 1965, I recorded a single, you know, and in 66, I finally made my first album.
Yeah.
And she was doing, in a different path, similar things in a parallel way. But it's not precisely 50,
yeah,
with a clear mark.
Sure.
You know?
But there was a point at which your fates kind of became joined, in a sense, when you started working together and as part of a larger group of artists and musicians, and you had a sort of program, you had a philosophy. Maybe you were doing as much avoiding as creating your own path, I don't know. But at that point, in the mid-60s, you were surrounded by a kind of earnest leftist folk pop, right?
In a way, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you didn't feel that this was you, necessarily.
Yeah.
And also right behind you, less than 10 years behind you, was the beginning of Bossa Nova, which must have felt like a completely different generation to you.
Well, yeah, in a way. As a matter of fact, Bossa Nova started in 1959, mm, and we belonged to this generation that grew up within the Bossa Nova environment, musically speaking, you know, in the world of Bossa Nova. Bossa Nova was a very strong thing in Brazil. It was revolutionary. It was something that really changed our minds, you know. And in fact, it did change the feeling of Brazilians, that Brazilians have about themselves, you, mm-hmm, know?
You've written about this, but can you just explain briefly what you mean by that power that bossa nova had to change people, because when we listen to it now, it just sounds soft and gentle and, you know, soothing. For you, it implied much more than that.
Yes, but, you know, quietness can be the power.
So I have heard, yeah.
You have written that.
Yeah.
So you must know. I could try to explain more or less this way. For example, in recent years, hip-hop, rap, has become the sound of the age, of the era.
Yeah.
And that's international. That's global, as most American things are. In Brazil, for example, we have in São Paulo the best, the most committed and strongest, most concentrated hip-hop group called Racionais MCs.
Right.
Racionais MCs.
Mm-hmm.
And Rational MCs.
Yeah.
They're wonderful. But up to now, you can't say that what they produce is influencing or creating admiration among the most important creators of hip-hop.
Of the form, yeah.
In America,
mm-hmm.
or anywhere else,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
When João Gilberto released his first three LPs in 3 years in a row, he amazed some of the most important names of modern jazz, from Stan Getz to Miles Davis.
Sure.
So this is something that, it's not something that Brazil is used to do.
So some of your excitement had to do with international impact.
This is international impact.
That came later.
Came a little later,
yeah.
in the early 60s.
Sure.
It was 59,
yeah.
The first LP album by João Gilberto, then 60, the second, 61, mm-hmm. the third, and 62, things happened in the night. People, American musicians were interested in it.
Yeah.
Maybe earlier. And they were, I just quoted two. I cited two names, but other people were interested in it. But it was mostly edgy creators who were interested in bossa nova. Then in a short period of time, it became a fad,
mm-hmm.
of something sweet, and some of the edgy musicians in America shied back from it, and, you know, and other things happened. The Beatles appeared. There was a special moment when the Beatles were competing in selling records with João Gilberto and Stan Getz and Astrud Gilberto,
yeah.
with Garota de Ipanema. The album, Getz Gilberto, was competing with the Beatles,
right.
in the charts.
Right.
And the appearance of the Beatles was a big revolution in history of popular music.
And it came, for you, it came just at the right time, I would think. You were ready to do something in Brazilian music that could use the energy of the Beatles.
Yes,
yeah.
That's what we wanted to do.
Right.
That's the statement we wanted to make.
Right. So there was a term back then that you talked about in your book, Tropical Truth, Esquerda Festiva, the festive left, which maybe had slightly
that.
Negative connotation.
Yes.
Like a left that was silly or trendy, you know,
yeah.
Like radical chic a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like
you also.
Radical chic.
You kind of liked that idea because you felt that the left wasn't festive enough.
Yes.
So you and your friends sort of considered yourself part of a festive left. And we're talking about Gilles. And we're talking about Gal Costa,
Tom Zé,
and some other people, all involved in the movement called Tropicalismo. And if you haven't heard about that, look it up and listen to the records. I feel that there was a lot at stake for you in trying to figure out where this movement was going and what you all wanted to achieve. And I also remember a detail from your book about Gilles in 1966, maybe, going off to Pernambuco.
Pernambuco, yes.
And coming back to São Paulo.
To Rio.
Oh, to Rio. And talking a lot about what he had seen and heard, and he had all these new ideas about what he wanted to accomplish. Can you talk about that a little bit? What was he talking about? What was he so energized by?
He was exactly saying that he had experienced the violence of our being under a military dictatorship more strongly than ever, being in Pernambuco. At the same time, he thought that the way our colleagues and ourselves reacted, responded to our situation was not violent the way it should be as a response to a violent oppression, mm-hmm. you know? At the same time, he was showing a recording of a group of primitive flute from rural areas in Pernambuco, mm-hmm. but very inventive. And the name of I remember the name of the piece, the musical piece by this group was Pipoca Moderna. That means modern popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible that it was called that. And it sounded like experimental music in a way, you know.
The group was Banda Pífano?
Banda de Pífanos de Caruaru.
And you recorded that song.
Years later. I wrote lyrics to it. And Gil recorded it, but I wrote the lyrics. Then I recorded it too, but many years later. Gil, he heard that, and he heard Strawberry Fields Forever by the Beatles.
At the same time.
And he was saying that these things should be the north, you know, for us.
Mm-hmm. Both of them together.
Both of them together,
uh-huh.
Yes. So he went not only talking to me, but also to our other colleagues. You know, we must do something. We must understand the times we're living in. You know, these two things that I've heard, and the understanding that we are under a violent situation should lead us to do a different thing. And he tried to make this movement with all of our colleagues. They reacted against it. And some are still reacting. Mm-hmm. For example, Dori Caymmi, who's a wonderful and beloved musician, whom I love dearly, not only as a musician, I love the person and everything. We talk about it and we laugh, but he still is totally against it. He says,
"Still,
come on, the Beatles, that's, you know, that's rubbish," he says. Still now, I don't like anything you guys did that in that period, nor other things that you do that are coherent with that, consistent with that attitude. He doesn't accept still. So back then, they reacted in a very serious way because they were nationalistic and they were, as we were, sons of Bossa Nova. So they wanted refined harmonies, complicated harmonies, and left-wingish lyrics, and a little flavor of traditional music from different areas of Brazil, mostly the Northeast. And we thought that was passive, you know, defensive. And we wanted to have something that really responded to our times. And we talked about mass culture and everything.
Yeah.
I was talking about that, too, with some other friends. Rogério Duarte, who was a graphic artist and a writer also. He also played guitar.
Yeah.
He died 4 days ago.
He did?
Yes.
I didn't know.
Yeah. I'm telling you. Yeah.
Well, so Gil came back with these sounds in his ears of Pipoca Moderna, the flute, sort of ancient-sounding flute thing from the Northeast, and also the Beatles.
With backward tapes and
everything. Yeah, with the avant-gardist techniques. And so was he working on some idea about, like, the past as the future and the future as the past or something like that, you know.
Maybe, ancient, yes. I never
future,
thought this.
Future means ancient. Because, well, the reason I ask this is because the idea of the future became important to you and your friends.
Yes.
You were fantasizing about a future in those days because the present was problematic, was oppressive. So within the fantasy of the future, there was social criticism.
No doubt.
Do you think it's harder to fantasize about the future now?
Well, it's very hard to fantasize about the future now in Brazil if you are a Brazilian.
Yeah.
Because it's so messy there. And things are going too fast and in a way, in a direction that we don't know. We are living hard times in Brazil. I never saw Brazilians so split as different groups, you know, so divided.
Really?
Yes.
Even having lived through the first coup, even having lived through 64?
Yes.
And 68?
Yes. The public opinion. Because back then you had the government that was sympathetic with left-wing students and some leaders and some intellectuals. And they were afraid. That was the Cold War. They were afraid of the communism taking over Brazil, which would be, well, the United States wouldn't accept it. Other forces within Brazil, I myself am not sure what good could it be that Brazil had become a communist country. I don't know. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's a hard thing to think about.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were afraid, and then they made this coup. There was no reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see people fighting on the streets
mm-hmm.
immediately, you know, because the coup came. The ordinary, the average Brazilian had not this problem in their minds. And now every Brazilian has to say, I am pro Lula and Dilma, or I'm against Lula and Dilma.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
this is everybody. You know?
So there must have been such a strange disjunction back then, because in 1964, the military forces actually came into Rio.
Yeah, they
people
came,
saw this
a crazy
happen.
Guy came from Minas to Rio.
Yeah.
And so he anticipated what they were planning to do more calmly.